welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this hour-long show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are living, with learning and awareness, we connect the dots and make up our world. Every Friday morning, on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics and perspectives not found in mainstream media. Time right now is 8:01 a.m. and the temperature outside is -23. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, John. I guess winter is here.
Yeah, it would seem that way.
It seems like a very long time that I've been here, and it's only been 2 weeks. But in the meantime, there's a lot of things that have happened, and we've had our first snowstorm, and all the roads are blocked, and everything. There's been quite a few challenges getting around, I must say.
Yeah, a lot of snow. Like, especially like the other day, I saw some of it come in last night. It was just really like coming down, really blowing forward. It looked like it took the street cleaners a while to get it all, but yeah.
And they haven't finished because our street is, I had to walk on the street to get to the corner on Portage. And then I found out that the buses wouldn't stop there, the buses I needed. So then I had to walk up to Arlington, and then that's when I was able to catch a bus. But, you know, like all kinds of things that were happening this morning, my bootlaces got undone, so I had to, right as I was trying to cross Portage, they came undone. I had to tie them up and I dropped my mitts and everything else and a toque, so I took the darn thing off. It has been quite a morning, and so I'm here safe and sound, but yeah, today is it's a wintry day, and we are having to deal with the weather. I'd just like to acknowledge that on Wooden Spoons, we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and wastewater of the Cree, Ojibwe Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40, First Nation, and its territory for our life-giving water. I also want to mention again that every second week, Marianne Sorelli and Kaylin Spain are going to be on Wooden Spoons with their program called Dialogues, Gravel Roads to City Lights. So this morning, we had a guest. We are still looking for our guest. Possibly there are some issues that have occurred, and hopefully we will be in touch with her this morning. The guest for this morning is Rachel Antonio Dunsmore, and I'm just going to introduce her in case that she calls into the station, or maybe we can try to reach her. There might be something happening there. So I heard. Anyway, so our guest, Rachel Antonio Dunsmore, she was once on air with Rico John on Fantastic Friday. And she has, for the past several years, been a student at the University of Manitoba. Rachel has a keen interest in gerontology, and after completing her master's degree, is now working on her PhD. Her research title is Social Identity and Power, Older Adults as Care Recipients, in Media Content on Family Care. That's quite a long title. An abstract of the research paper involved Rachel Antonio Dunsmore, Laura Funk, and Dana Sawchuk, Department of Sociology and Criminology, University of Manitoba, Canada, and Sociology from Wilfrid Laurier in University Waterloo, Canada. So with Rachel, if we are able to reach her this morning, we will be talking to her about her focus on her PhD studies in gerontology. So we don't know what has happened, and it is one of those one of those mornings that things can go awry, and we will catch up to her the next time we're on Wooden Spoons, which will be in 2 weeks, during the Christmas period. And we'll see what we will follow up on that. So I guess we're just going to have to do some improvising this morning. How has your week been, John?
Yeah, even like with the blizzard, my week's been, I don't know, pretty chill, actually. I've been spending a lot of time inside just because of the bad weather outside and all that.
Yeah, it just sort of came suddenly, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
And then all of a sudden we were snowed over, and there is no way of getting out. There's, like, everything is, the back lanes are all blocked, and the streets are starting to open up. On Portage Avenue, they've done a very good job.
Mm-hmm.
And the sidewalks are opened. And at least where I was, you know, where I was walking. But, yeah, they have been doing a good job. And it's just sort of a wake-up call that we have to realize we're now in winter. But it's supposed to be getting warmer as well.
Yeah, because, like, I don't think we haven't had a lot of snowfall, or we've had a pretty late snowfall, so I feel like this is just making up for all that lost time, but just in one night.
I know, and, you know, this is near the Christmas season, and my daughter is coming in from Calgary, and, you know, it's a big, you know, it's a worrisome thing when you think she's coming by herself with the dog, and... And my son and his wife are coming in from Vancouver, so we're going to be having a lot of the family here, and I'm finding that I'm not ready for Christmas.
Hmm.
I'm just finished doing sending today. I'm going to be mailing my first Christmas cards, and I've been doing a lot of. Thinking about what I'm going to be baking and cooking and all that stuff, because we do have Christmas dinners, and also getting gifts. So it's all going to be scrunched in this coming week before Christmas. So anyway, that's everybody's has their plans, and we're hearing the background music.
Yeah.
Just finishing with Dave Brubeck. Well, maybe I will just provide some information from Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. And this is a concern that they have. It's the threat of GMO garden seeds. Farmers are warning home garden. Farmers are warning home gardeners about genetically modified or GM, genetically engineered garden seeds that could be released in Canada soon. The over 150 farmers in Ontario and British Columbia, many supplying local and organic markets, have signed a declaration opposing the sale of genetically modified vegetable seeds. And when I see the term GM or genetically modified, it just makes me so angry, because it just brings me visions of Monsanto, now Bayer, and their ruthless takeover of the seeds, and the fact that they are able to do that at the University of Manitoba is quite scandalous. There was a lot of protest about it when they first tried to do this years ago, but because the university needed money, Monsanto had a lot of money. And money talks, and money has power, and corporations have power. And now Monsanto has sold out to Bayer, and Bayer is on the same path. Because of these genetically modified seeds, we are seeing a loss of the natural seeds and the seeds that are natural to nature. And there's a lot of issues with genetically modified plants because they have a chemical glyphosate that's part of the plant itself, which is a poison, which is actually a cancer-causing chemical. And Dr. Meg Sears, who has been on our program a number of times, and I'm hoping I certainly will be asking her to come on air again to talk about this glyphosate and what it does and how it is related to cancer. The number, the incidence of cancer has raised, has gone up exponentially. In my, you know, I'm from the older generation, of course. Growing up, cancer was very rare. And now just can't people sort of take cancer for granted? If you get cancer, there's not a big deal. You get treatment, you know, and that sort of thing, unless, you know, unless it gets too far advanced. So we are sort of maybe a bit, I mean, everybody, nobody wants to have cancer. That is something very concerning. But the fact is that it was one time quite rare. And with the advent of genetically modified seeds with glyphosate in the food system, glyphosate is meant to be a poison for insects. And reports are coming, have been coming out that I have been reading, scientific reports, that the monarch butterfly decline, a great part of it is due to modern agriculture. And of course, modern agriculture is based on the control of Monsanto for the most part. There are a few farmers. There are farmers that are organic farmers, and they are struggling, and they want to defend the right to protect the seeds. Monsanto seeds not only are harmful to the environment, they also spread into the environment. And so we get these genetically modified organisms growing in the wild. And so this is another issue. The environment is our home. Creation, the nature is our home. And if we disrespect nature, we'll inevitably harm ourselves. And I just think of the blatant disregard for the rights of animals and the rights of all creatures on this planet and the rights of plants that we have to be so blinded by monetary values that we would, you know, damage the earth. And so I think this is the litmus test in every case. Well, how does it affect the environment? How does it affect other creatures? If we think we're the only important creatures on earth, well, once our animals are gone, we are not going to be surviving either. We live on animals. We eat animals. You know, so we can't, it's at our own peril that we ignore the things that harm nature. Now this report here that I'm reading about the threat of GMO garden seeds, which is being put out by the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. The farmers are making their voices heard at the same time that Canada has approved a GM purple tomato for growing and eating. The company could start selling GM seeds and tomatoes soon. For information, check our new GM product alert. That's at CBAN. And it says they encourage us to take action. They say, the newsletter says, stand with these farmers and take action today. At home, this is what you can do. Grocery stores are making their decisions right now about stocking new GM fruits and vegetables and GM seeds. And we know that customer letters are very influential. Write to your grocery store today. Tell them not to sell the GM purple tomato or any other genetically modified fruits and vegetables in the produce section, and not to sell any genetically modified seeds in their store or garden center. So this so this is one point of action. So this might take a little time, but if you have that interest and concern, which you should have, it is very important to take the time to write a letter to the stores that you go to. We live close to Food Fair. We shop there all the time, and we have a good relationship with them. Mary Jane's Cooking School, we have a system where we put things on order there and pay at the end of the month for groceries for for our classes. So a letter would be, they would be prepared. They would appreciate a letter. It will help them understand what the issue is and maybe act on it, and hopefully they would act on it. It is really not fair to the public. Most people wouldn't even know what a purple tomato is and whether it's a good tomato or not. I mean, it's probably not in their in their thinking. I mean, do you think about that, John, when you're...
It sounds interesting, a purple tomato. I think I heard once, like, in the 90s, Heinz ketchup release, like, purple ketchup. I don't think it caught on, but... Yeah, purple... I would try a purple tomato, and, like, if there was a seed that could grow it, but... I don't know. I don't like that it's Monsanto that's making it and trying to monopolize GMO for themselves. I mean, that obviously that's not good. But, you know, if I saw a purple tomato at the store, I'd probably try it out.
Yeah, and that's probably the attraction. People will be attracted to trying it out. And they don't really understand what genetic modification is and that it is harmful to your health. Because it does affect people. So, anyway, be aware of that. And I guess that's just a good point, you know, that people are attracted to what looks interesting or is colorful.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
So to write a letter to the store would be a helpful thing because they, store managers, would be sensitive to what is being sold. Actually, they should be anyway. Actually, I went to where I was shopping. I saw some garlic, and the label said made in China. So I didn't buy it anymore. I don't want to buy anything from China because we don't know what kind of land it is grown on. There are a lot of reports, like it could be grown on very toxic type of land. So I buy the garlic that's grown in Canada. And I know somebody by the name of John Waters. He had been on our guest years ago. He's an organic farmer from way back from in British Columbia. I think it's in British Columbia. He has a farm in the mountainside. And he and his wife, they would come to Winnipeg in the summer. I mean, yeah, they would come to Winnipeg during the winter And but they would be, he had horses and he loved his horses. And he had a farm where he grew everything in a natural way. And his garlic is wonderful. And I see garlic that I believe must come from his farm. And I can't remember for the life of me what the name of the farm is. But he has a farm and he does everything by hand. And he has horses he uses the horses to do the work, you know, like plowing the land and things like that. And he loves his horses. And years ago, when my brother was still alive, John Waters and my brother, they were a guest on Wooden Spoons because they had this in common, their love of horses. And John was a very sophisticated sort of person. My brother was very upfront and not so. He was a very, he had a roughness about, sort of a roughness to him, but they just loved each other. They were great friends, and they got along fabulously. So anyway, just sort of a sideline here. But the garlic that I see at DeLuca's, I believe, it must come from, I'm going to have to find out, but I think it might come from John Waters, because he came to Winnipeg and he was marketing in Winnipeg as well. Very lovely garlic. Grocery stores are making their decision right now about stocking new GM fruits and vegetables and GM seeds, and we know that customer letters are very influential. So write to your grocery store today and tell them not to sell the GM purple tomato or any other GM fruits and vegetables in the produce section, and not to sell any genetically modified seeds in their store or garden center. So, and there's a lot of, this is a very important issue for people that are, there's usually an event of seed sales in the spring in different places, and I have been to them. A seed market, and so this is where people sell their seeds and different types of plants, and this would be very, very concerning to them. They do not sell anything that's genetically modified. So it would be something that they would, at some local Seedy Saturday event, that's usually what they call them. If you're having that, you know, have a sign or have pamphlets to stop GMO garden seeds, stop having them. The new threat of GM garden seeds, the new threat to our seed system and food system is looming. Genetically modified GM or genetically engineered vegetable seeds could soon be sold to small growers and home gardeners in Canada for the first time. And Health Canada and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency have approved a genetically engineered tomato, trademarked the purple tomato, from the small U.S. company called Norfolk Healthy Produce, which was set up to market the product. Seeds of this genetically engineered tomato are already being sold to home gardeners in the U.S. The GM purple tomato is the first GM tomato approved for growing in Canada. And if sold in grocery stores, it would be the first GM tomato in Canadian produce sections since Monsanto removed the Flavor Saver, spelled F-L-A-V-R, and Saver, S-A-V-R, a tomato from the market in 1997. The Flavor Saver is rumored to have been briefly sold in one grocery store in Toronto in 1996. The sale of GM garden seeds constitutes a direct attack on organic food and farming and a threat to Canada's seed supply. If genetically modified garden seeds are sold, there is a high likelihood they will contaminate seed stocks and end up unwanted in gardens and on farms across Canada. There are only three genetically modified fruits and vegetables currently on the market in Canada. with a very marginal presence in grocery stores. GM sweet corn, GM papaya, and GM pineapple. Those are the three things. Until now, genetic engineering in our diets has been dominated by processed food ingredients from GM corn, GM canola, GM soy, and GM sugar beet. But this could start to change. So in Canada, we have canola. This is where the Monsanto had an arrangement with the University of Manitoba. It was very controversial. I remember when that was going on. And a lot of professors, a lot of people at the university were against it. But as the reality of the situation, the university needed money, and Monsanto has their garden plots right across from the University of Manitoba. I remember, that was quite a few years ago, that we used to go out, we were protesting that. I still have a picture of a few of us who were out there with our signs in front of Monsanto's gardens and at the University of Manitoba. But nobody seemed to know about it at the University of Manitoba. None of the students seemed to be aware. So, you know, it was just sort of happening. So that they grow canola there. And so since then, I never buy canola. I just don't buy canola, because what happened is the organic canola farmers got pushed out. You can't have genetically modified foods because they spread to the organic farms. And there was a huge, this is quite a while ago, there was a case of a farmer, I think it was in Saskatchewan. He was taken to court, sued by Monsanto, because they found genetically modified plants growing in his crop. And they fined him for that. And there was a huge uproar. And I remember there was a big meeting with a bunch of people. It might have been at the art gallery. I can't remember where it was. But we had speakers on it. And Shiv Chopra, who was a famous scientist, one of the best scientists in the world, that was at the Health Canada, he was there. And there was a lot of discussion about what happened to Percy Schreiber because of the plants growing that had grown into his crops, was found in his field. And so that was a pretty brutal sort of thing that happened, but it was totally unfair, because he wouldn't be putting that seed in his crop. It blew in from Monsanto, and I'm not sure how the whole thing ended. But I remember that was quite the controversy, and it was a challenge for everybody. And it was certainly quite immoral, the whole thing. So anyway, so now what we have for more information, GM product alert, genetically engineered purple tomato seeds and fruit approved in Canada, was December the 10th, 2025. Alert, genetically modified garden seeds, November 2025. Report, gene-edited fruits and vegetables, the threat of new GMOs in Canada, updated December 2025. and there's also cban.ca seeds action. So this is the message from CBAN, and the coordinator of CBAN is Lucy Charette, and she puts out these reports. And it was sent to me by Paulette LaFortune, which I really appreciate. Thank you, Paulette, for that. And maybe we'll have her on as a guest as well, because she has a lot of information to share, being someone who grows her own food as well. So on that note, I don't think we are going to hear from Rachel. I think there is something that went amiss, but we will catch up to her in the next round.
Yeah, I could put on some music if you'd like.
Do you think A Christmas Carol would be good?
Sure. Did you have one in mind?
Well, how about We Three Kings? That's a different version of We Three Kings, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the YouTube version, so...
Oh, okay. you're a real techie there, John. I have some information I'd like to share also. It's an interesting... It's from the Organic Consumer Association. And there's an article written by Barbara Twitchell and she has an article about synthetic food dyes and how they beautify our food. And some of those dyes are just not a very good thing to have. I wanted to actually focus on some plants. She says, the article says, Food is a foundation for the, it's not just about calories, it's a foundation for human development and climate adaptation. And she's this person has offered once considered weeds, these seven plants are garden beauties and good for the ecosystem. So the seven native plants to grow in your garden, I will read about them. One is the common milkweed. And the milkweed is a very important plant, and it's a very beautiful plant. And I have milkweed growing in my yard. It's beautiful. And, of course, one of the draws about the milkweed is because it attracts the monarch butterfly. It is one of the plants that the monarch butterfly lays its... Well, it lays its eggs, and the caterpillars feed on the milkweed. And so this flowering plant blooms in a sphere of pink flowers in the summer, and it is the host for the monarch butterfly, and it does have a competitive root system, so it can it. I never really paid attention to that, but. The roots can spread underground, and then you get other milkweeds growing. I know that Tallgrass Prairie, their store on Westminster, they grow milkweed, and it just flourishes in their. In front of their stores or nearby. There's the common yarrow, often seen in vacant lots. And this is yellow flowers. The flower heads consist of dainty florets that look just like a wildflower bouquet. It has many color variations. Well, I think what that is the yellow one that I'm thinking of. I have some of those plants, and they're very hardy. There's another plant called jewelweed with little orange trumpet-shaped flowers. It's an annual that often attracts hummingbirds. Of course, it's hard to see a hummingbird in the city, I think. I know in the country, my cousin has a bird feeder for hummingbirds. And they come, and he has quite a few there, so that's quite nice. It's quite encouraging. Jewelweed is another plant. It has little orange trumpet-shaped flowers, and, yeah, that's one I just mentioned, and it does attract hummingbirds. And then there's switchgrass. This tall roadside grass can make a dramatic statement in a garden, and I'm not sure what that looks like. Little blue stem, another roadside grass, as the name suggests, has a blue color that makes it striking in a garden and is on the short side of 2 to 3 feet tall. There's another one called self-heal. In the mint family, this plant is one of the few natives that grows around the world, and it has medicinal uses. And then there's the woolly blue violet, the state flower of Rhode Island and Illinois and New Jersey. This little flower blooms from April until June. So those are just sort of the plants that you can have in your garden, in your yard. And they are helpful to the environment. So John F. Kennedy Jr., he's in the Trump administration, and he's also has some very strong ideas, strong values pertaining to protecting nature. And he's been accused of being an anti-vaxxer. And I want to repeat that. Not that long ago, Teresa Tan, who's at the head of the health department or what some organization, an authority, she wrote about John F. Kennedy out of I have to say, out of an ignorant understand lack of with lack of understanding of what she was talking about, she accused John Kennedy Jr. as being an anti-vaxxer, and that is totally wrong. He is what he does is. And this goes back quite a number of years. My brother and I used to be watching John F. Kennedy. That's before he was in government, in the United States government. But he had a lot of, we were watching a lot of his programs about the vaccines and so forth. What he was saying is that he was not against vaccines, but he was taking note of harmful reactions that some people experienced when they got the vaccine. In Canada, the Jehovah's Witnesses are exempt from the vaccine because that's against their religion. But for the most part, the government wants everybody to get vaccinated. Then there was a National Citizens Inquiry. Now, John F. Kennedy had been taking note, has a record of cases that people have been harmed by vaccines. So I want to make that has to be corrected. He's not an anti-vaxxer at all. So there was, during the COVID years, and I want to remind people about that, there was a National Citizens Inquiry. If you hadn't heard about it, it's because the Canadian government did not want anyone to hear about it, or the CBC, rather, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, didn't want people to hear about it. At first, they actually came. They came to one event the National Citizens Inquiry came right across Canada. They came to one event, and they actually showed the event. It was at the Victoria Inn, I believe. And I went for the one day that they were in Winnipeg. And they showed the event on television, but it immediately got cut off. It was not allowed to be shown. So that was the end of that. But there were a lot of people that testified. They had been vetted by, carefully vetted. Many of them were professionals, some were ordinary people, and amongst those, I was able to get a number of people that wanted to speak up about, that had adverse effects with the vaccine, and or the things that happened, some of the human rights violations that occurred because of this conflict. There was one person in Steinbach who was, he was not a preacher, but people were very isolated because no one could congregate at that time. And so he had, he put on, in an area in Steinbach, people could gather together in their cars, the cars were separated, and people could get together, but they weren't going into each other's cars, so they were not close together. So that there was that safety precaution, and he was doing some preaching, although he wasn't a minister. He just wanted to talk about it. He wanted to talk about what was happening and that sort of thing. And the RCMP came and arrested him. And actually, I think they tried to arrest people even though they were in their cars. And he was put in jail in a dark cell where he couldn't see anything. There was no lights. He was in a totally dark room, and he suffered post-traumatic stress as a result of that event. He was bailed from jail from some people that put up money to get him out. But that was he was going to be my guest, but he left the province. He couldn't live in Manitoba anymore. At the same time, while the RCMP were arresting people, in Winnipeg, people were going into Walmart and doing shopping. And they were not, nobody arrested anybody for shopping at Walmart. But the people were arrested for being in their cars, listening to a sermon, because they were isolated. They wanted to hear somebody talk. They missed that they were isolated. I just want to bring that out. People don't know about the underside of the COVID story in Canada. And that is greatly due to the previous government under Justin Trudeau. So I know that there's you know, talk about COVID, but there should be an awareness that it is true. The COVID vaccine harms some people, not all of them. It harms some people. And I know one of them was a volunteer with us, and he developed fibrous tissue, which is one of the things that was discussed at that conference at the National Citizens Inquiry, because there's a certain person, and will not name, that made a presentation, and he was the funeral director. And he found this particular phenomena in certain people that had been vaccinated, and they had fibrous tissue in their bodies. And this fibrous tissue could be quite dangerous. It could get into the heart, and it spread. And then there was a volunteer I had who took the vaccine because of his partner, for her sake, and he developed those symptoms. And he had, as a result of that, he had shortness of breath, and he had all these fibers, these lumps on his skin. He actually showed me, and he had problems breathing. So I have seen that, witnessed it, and I have attended the National Citizens Inquiry. So I just want to make a point that when this COVID issue arises again, that to be aware that some people may be harmed. And so there should not be a situation of being forced to take this vaccine. So that's just commentary. And I think we could have another song. Do you have any comments, John? You might disagree.
Yeah, like I think that like I'm not really much of an anti-vaxxer. I know that for the COVID vaccine, it was very rare that people had side effects, so maybe keep that in mind. But yeah, if you're one of the people that thinks you are going to have that, I think that I do agree that you shouldn't have to get it or be forced to, but yeah.
How about, we're thinking of Christmas carols, are we? Or do you have something in mind here?
I could put on another Christmas song.
Yeah, it's the Christmas season. Get into the spirit.
Here's a Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad, feliz Navidad, feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. Navidad.
That's a pretty lively song. Okay, we're getting to the end of our program, and I would like to maybe have a recipe. I thought I have a couple of recipes, and this one is it sort of caught my attention. Carrot and red lentil soup with coconut milk. I think that's pretty interesting. So this one, use 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter, and 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 red onion sliced, 1 leek, the white part only, finely chopped, and 1 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of finely chopped fresh thyme, stems removed, 2 garlic cloves minced, 1 large vine tomato, blanched, peeled, seeded, and diced, which is optional, 1 tablespoon of double concentrated tomato paste, and 2 cups of peeled and sliced carrots, about 4 to 5 carrots, and 1 cup of dried red lentils, rinsed and sorted. Red lentils are so easy to cook. I really like using them a lot because they don't take long to cook. You don't have to soak them like you do for others. 4 cups of hot water and 1 bay leaf. Sea salt and black pepper to taste, and 3/4 cup of coconut, unsweetened coconut milk or more to taste, and 1 tablespoon of squeezed lemon juice or to taste. And for garnish, you can use lime segments or chopped cilantro or crushed peppercorns. That's kind of interesting. So in a large pot, a heavy pot, you melt the butter over medium heat, add the oil, then add the onion, the leek, the cumin, and thyme, and cook for 3 to 4 minutes, stirring until fragrant and the onion is soft. Add the garlic and cook for 1 minute. Add the tomato and tomato paste. And for 2 to 3 minutes until the tomato has softened. Then you add the carrots, the lentils, and cook, and the water and bay leaf, and season with salt and pepper. Cover and simmer for about 20 minutes until the vegetables and lentils are soft. Remove from the heat, discard the bay leaf, and transfer the soup to the bowl of a food or to a food processor, or use an electric hand blender and puree until smooth. I think that would be the best way, just to use a hand blender. And then you return the soup to the pot if you're taking it out, and stir in the coconut milk. Reheat and check the seasoning for salt and pepper, and for, you know, if it needs more coconut milk or not, and serve in bowls with a squeeze of lime juice, cilantro, and crushed red peppercorns. And it says if you use the green part of the leeks, the orange color from the carrots will be diminished. So that's why they say using the white parts. And so it's come from the Mindful Kitchen. So actually, we're getting towards the end of their program, and I think I want to wish everybody a very a wonderful Christmas. And I would like us to end with Silent Night, because it is a religious time of the year, and it would be nice to have that as a way of ending our program this morning. And we'll see you next year.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
In my mind,
Merry Christmas
to you.